Welcome to APB, New York Chiefs, a service for New York's police executives. Now, Mr. Mark Spahn, Director of Research, Development, and Training for the New York State Association of Chiefs of Police.
On October 11, 2009, 31-year-old Carmen Huertas left a party in Manhattan with seven children in her station wagon. It's alleged that Huertas had been drinking during the party. On the trip back to the Bronx, she lost control of the car and crashed into a wooded area along the highway. Three of the children who were riding in the back compartment were ejected onto the roadway. When emergency responders arrived, they found one of the girls unresponsive. Suffering from blunt force injuries to her head and torso, she was transported by ambulance to the hospital, where she was pronounced dead. That girl was 11-year-old Leandra Rosado. By now, you've heard of Leandra's Law, which accomplishes two goals. First, to increase the penalty for driving drunk with children in the vehicle, and second, to increase the use of the ignition interlock device. The provisions of the law for DWI with a child passenger took effect on December 18, 2009. The law relating to the expanded use of the ignition interlock applies to individuals sentenced on or after August 15, 2010. I recently spoke about Leandra's Law with Mary Cavaney, Deputy Secretary for Public Safety for the State of New York.
This law was really designed to give law enforcement more tools to get at people that are driving while impaired by drugs or alcohol. We had some horrific crashes the last year, both the crash that killed Leandra Rosado as well as the Taconic crash. So it became very apparent to the governor's office that we had adults driving with children in the vehicle.
Secretary Cavaney talks about the elements of the new aggravated DWI.
So the new enhanced felony DWI basically states that as of December 18th, if you're 08 or impaired by drugs and you have someone 15 or less in the vehicle, that as a first-time offender, you're now guilty of a Class E felony.
Leandra's Law was in effect for a very short time before arrests started making headlines.
We have seen at the first weekend, we had at least a half a dozen of the new felonies charged, the first 72 hours after the law came into effect. And you would be very, very surprised and sort of dismayed at the individuals charged with this. We've had physicians. We've had principals, a principal charged with her nine-month-old son with a .10 at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Leandra's Law brings enhanced penalties for persons convicted. Again, Mary Cavaney.
The minimum mandatory of 6 months of mandatory imposition of an interlock, as well as requiring the police officer to make a CPS report that the person that is the parent, guardian, or legal custodian of that child was the defendant driving the vehicle.
We'll talk more about some of the specifics of the ignition interlock devices and the mandated reporting to the State Central Register. In addition to the changes in the V&T, Leandra's Law also brought about changes to the penal law.
Now we have vehicular assault in the first degree, which is a Class D nonviolent, which, as you know, can get up to 7 years in state prison if the person commits vehicular assault second, but also has the child in the vehicle. So basically, the nature of the new assault sections is if there is a child 15 or less in the vehicle, it upgrades it by one felony. So it takes and creates the aggravated vehicular assault and says that at this time, if you commit aggravated vehicular assault and also reckless driving with a child, it's a Class C violent. So all of the assaults and the manslaughters and homicides are upgraded by one felony degree if there's a child 15 or less in the vehicle.
According to a document published by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, technology presents exciting possibilities in the area of impaired driving prevention. One promising strategy is the breath alcohol ignition interlock device. This is an aftermarket device installed in a motor vehicle to prevent a driver from operating the vehicle if the driver's been drinking. Before starting the vehicle, a driver must breathe into the device. If the driver's BAC is over a preset limit, an ignition interlock will not allow the vehicle to start. I recently spoke with Robert Macaron, the State Director for the Division of Probation and Correctional Alternatives. I asked him what a police officer can expect to see in a car that's been equipped with an interlock device.
Well, for the most part, what the police officer will see is really a tube to blow into, because the real computer aspect will be under the dash and hooked into the electronics of the automobile and in the engine compartment. So there won't be a lot for the police officer to see. And
how does this device work?
If the person gets into the motor vehicle and blows into the device, and that measures a level of point greater than 0.025 is what we call the set point. So a very low threshold. Every time a person starts an automobile with one of these devices, they'll be tested. If they fail that test, they'll be given a period, 5 to 15 minutes, where they'll have to wait and restart the car.
Even though the car has been successfully started, that doesn't mean that a driver can just keep the car running.
There'll be a series of rolling tests that will occur while the person's driving the automobile, and they'll be prompted to take the tests.
I asked Director Macaron what happens if a driver fails an initial test, fails a rolling retest, or misses a rolling retest.
If they blow a bad test on a rolling test, then the retest is prompted within 1 to 3 minutes. So we're not going to allow an operator under the influence of alcohol to drive very far. Within the next minute, they're going to be prompted. There are reasons. The reason that there is a rolling retest as well as a startup retest is that there are legitimate reasons that people fail these exams. Sometimes they're cleansing their hands with Purell. They've eaten an inappropriate, some type of food that can certainly cause the machine to give them what's called a false positive. But they're trained on those behaviors, and they quickly adapt at what will send that machine to cause a violation. So these instruments are extremely sensitive and extremely reliable.
Not only will these devices lock out the ignition for an impaired driver, they also keep a record. Again, Bob Macaron.
Well, what they will do is they will record each and every test and the results. So every time the operator gets into that motor vehicle, they will record the results of that exam. Every retest, every rolling test, every rolling retest, and every missed test, as well as every attempt to tamper or circumvent the device, is all recorded. There are various technologies, I should add, Mark, ranging from one instrument that you go in every 30 days and you download the data and it's sent to the manufacturer, all the way to the extreme of real-time GPS, real-time reporting.
Now, here's something that patrol officers should be aware of. Something they may encounter in the field when a driver fails or misses a rolling retest.
Then what happens is the automobile goes into a lockout mode. That causes two things to occur. First of all, a siren within the instrument, within the vehicle, causes the operator to pull over to the side of the road and restart the vehicle. So he must shut off the vehicle and restart. Frankly, it's untenable to continue to drive that automobile with a siren blaring within the vehicle. So there's a protection there. But there's an added condition, too, and that is once you have a failed retest, just one failed retest or a failed rolling retest, the operator of that vehicle must bring that vehicle into the installation service center within 5 days, or the vehicle will become completely immobilized.
The director also explained that it's a Class A misdemeanor to circumvent an ignition interlock, for instance, by having someone else blow into the device. And he also mentioned that technology in some of these devices is helping to eliminate those situations.
What the manufacturing industry has done is now in the process of implementing cameras. So it's actually taking the picture of the person blowing into the instrument. So we have photographic evidence that the person blowing into the instrument is indeed the operator.
I asked the director about the impact of ignition interlock devices on the number of DWI convictions in New York.
First of all, we have 25,000 convictions. for DWI in New York State each year. 9,000 offenders are sentenced to probation supervision, 3,000 felonies, and 6,000 misdemeanors. And the other 16,000 dispositions are basically writing a check to the court for a fine and walking out of court. With Landry's Law, over the course of the next year, all 25,000, beginning August 15th, 2010, will be required to install an ignition interlock device on their automobile.
And what can we expect to see in cases involving conditional discharge?
About 70% of the conditional discharge cases, which are misdemeanors, of course, will not return to the court. That's our experience. They learn, they change their behavior, and they will not return to the court.
And the impact to public safety?
Of course, with fewer drinking and driver arrests, that means there's less drinking and driving out there that's occurring. Safer highways, fewer arrests, fewer bookings, fewer prosecutions, and fewer people in our county jails.
As a result of the tragic death last year of 11-year-old Leandra Rosado and the heroic advocacy of her father, Lenny Rosado, New York State now has the toughest anti-drunk driving law in the nation. And this summer, the consequences for this potentially deportable offense will be greater, even for first-time offenders. In closing, I'd like to stress two points. One, even first-time drunk drivers will have to install interlocks if they're sentenced after August 15, 2010. And two, keep in mind that if someone is convicted of DWI prior to August 15th, but sentenced afterward, they are subject to the interlock provision.
Thanks for joining Mark Spahn for APB, New York Chiefs. If you have a suggestion for a future APB topic, call us at 518-355-3371 or email at apb@nychiefs.org.